Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is Sun Belt Commissioner Keith Gill, and I listen to the Fun Belt Podcast.
This is the Fun Belt Podcast, part of the Believe Network.
Folks, to Dusty Thibodeau of Warhawk Report, Jeremy Harper of Howlraiser, and Shane Metlin of the Daily News Record.
I think it's potentially a very good week for the Sun Belt.
But I'm just kind of going off on a random rant. It's just frustrating. It's
All right. Welcome back, guys. Fun Belt Podcast. It's not just the Sunbelt podcast. Anybody can do a Sunbelt podcast. Only Dusty, Shane, and I can do a Funbelt podcast. And guess what, guys? We're on the cusp. We are on Pensacola time, gentlemen. Tomorrow, Tuesday in the evening, we get the start of the men's Sunbelt tournament bracket down there in Pensacola. I'm not quite sure when the women start, Dusty. Maybe you can help me out with that. Do they start earlier in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's a Tuesday start time there as well. I don't remember the dates or the times, rather, offhand. But we are looking at the women tipping off Tuesday, 11:30 and 2 o'clock.
Yeah, okay, because the men, I think, start at 5:30 and then like something like, what, 7:30 or 8 for the second.
Five and seven.
Yeah, okay. So I gotta get ready for that. I gotta get my TV queued up. I gotta get my popcorn
stretched and ready.
I gotta get stretched because I do a lot of yelling. I gotta get my bet online bets placed because I do that. I don't spend a lot of money, but I do a little bit.
Bet online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head over to BetOnline today to become part of the team and remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
So guys, are you excited about this tournament? Because, all right, at the beginning of the year, Shane, you said this is going to be the year that the Sun Belt puts in two guys. And I kind of chuckled. I went, "Bop." We're talking about Sun Belt basketball here. And then it looked like it might happen because things were looking pretty good. And then, you know, the net sort of skewed a little bit. But we're sort of on the cusp. It could happen. Shane, could it happen?
I don't think it's likely. I mean, I think it's going to take maybe some weird stuff happening outside of the Sun Belt. And, you know, obviously none of this happens in a vacuum. Yeah. It'll be tough because for whatever reason, I mean, I think if you're an App State fan, you might look at this as the perfect explanation that the net is so flawed is that they've beaten JMU twice and they're, you know, what, 15, 20 spots behind them in the net right now. And You know, so that gives JMU the best chance at an at-large, just kind of based on those metrics. But then as we talked to, you know, Ryan McGee the other day, it doesn't look good if you lose to the same team three times. And
no, it doesn't. No.
That's kind of – so it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't for the Sun Belt as far as, like, getting the second team in. I feel like, you know, JMU will show that they were worthy of an at-large bid if they win the automatic bid. And it's kind of, you know, catch 22 there.
Ah, okay. Okay, I see that. Well, what about you, Dusty? You see, think there's any chance that is for somehow, let's just pretend. This is not a scenario I care for because I'm a fan of another team. But let's say that Appalachian State, let's say this, Shane, let's say James Madison gets beaten their little first round. They're out. Appalachian okay. State beats somebody like, I don't know, Old Dominion to win. Then what happens?
Then it's the same as every other year. Appalachian State's the conference champion, and they go to the NCAA tournament.
And Old Dominion's probably buying away their way into a C tournament.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, absolutely. Okay. That would pretty much make JMU this year Southern Miss, and they'll hope they can go to the NIT and finish it that way.
All right, because we're pretty angry at the NIT right now. Don't get Dusty started on the NIT. He will go ballistic. He'll go insane.
Shane, in Jeremy's doomsday scenario, will James Madison buy their way into a C-level tournament?
I don't know. Most of the time, I don't think they would. When you're like possibly on the verge of being able to say you won 30 games and these guys really probably deserve to play in the postseason somewhere. I don't know. I mean, it's not a topic I've broached with Mark Byington this year. So I don't know exactly how he would react to it this time around.
The basketball tournament, though, remember, is now a neutral site. So it's no longer on the campus. So they would get to play basketball somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, do we know the neutral site?
I want to say it was Boca or Miami-ish.
Someplace. Was in Daytona last year, wasn't it?
Maybe that's what it was. I was thinking. Yeah. I knew it was somewhere in Florida.
You got to get close to Miami so Miami can start just NIL poaching guys. They can just come by and just take who they want.
Make scouting easier.
But, guys, we are at the Sun Belt Tournament. Today, the Sun Belt released their all-conference teams. Were there any surprises? I don't really think so. There was some confusion. I think there were – Jane, can you explain this, how two first-year players – one's named player of the year, doesn't get on the first team. Another first-year player isn't named player of the year, but gets on the first team. How does that happen?
I don't – my guess is maybe the coaches and SIDs that voted just kind of forgot that Trayvon Spillers was also a newcomer.
I kind of forgot that.
I mean, he comes out of JUCO, so he's obviously not getting as much fanfare as being a newcomer as a guy who transfers in from the ACC. And that would be my guess. I think it's probably one of two scenarios. It's maybe a combination of the two.
Ooh, okay.
It's that some people just forgot that he was a newcomer.
Uh-huh.
And also maybe it was like, oh, JMU and App State are clearly the top two teams. They are a little bit above everybody else. We need to kind of try to figure out how to get their guys in the first and second teams.
A little bit of cleaving there. I could see.
Yeah. And maybe it was like, oh, well, but App State, you know, beat them twice. They should probably have the two first teamers. And maybe it didn't have much to do. I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for one guy to be deemed the best newcomer, but not above him on the all conference teams.
Dusty, we could not help but to notice that our favorite player in the entire league, Mitchikloshevsky from ULM, got the third team nod. Pretty good.
Good rebound year coming in off of an injury, so wasn't real sure how he was going to deal with the rehab and with playing again full time. He did pretty good. He kind of carried the Warhawks there a lot of times along with Tyree LaCour. It'll be sad to see him ride off into the sunset and back to the Middle East or into Georgia when his playing days are done there on the Bayou. But maybe he has a good career over in Europe, but we'll have to kind of wait and see.
Yeah, he got on my list of 10 favorite players to watch in the Sun Belt tournament because he's this big guy, right? He can clog up the middle. He can get you a rebound. But then what his specialty is doing that corner three that just tears your heart out. So to me, he's just a fun guy to watch. So I was glad that he got his due. Coach of the Year, Dustin Kearns. Sound about no right? Surprise. No? All right. Yeah. Who else could have? Yeah.
15-0 at home and really just kind of took the league by the horns and rode it all the way to a championship, regular season championship. Not surprised at all.
What about Scott Cross? His team selected to finish eighth in the preseason, comes in third. Does that show that he did a pretty good job?
Yeah, pretty good job. And I would put, you know, your guy Brian Hutchin in
the
conversation too. But I still think it's probably Kearns was the guy that made the most sense. But you know, I'd put those guys in the conversation. And you know, most years Mark Byington, what he did probably would have got him in the conversation. But you know, it was a deep league coaching wise, and you lose twice to App State, you're not going to beat that guy out for a conference coach of the year.
Yeah, probably not. So, who was player of the year?
That's Terrence Edwards.
That's right. Terrence Edwards, the man who nobody, by the way, has attempted more free throws than Terrence Edwards this year in the Sun Belt. And he makes like 81% of them. So just on that stat alone, I have to give my thumbs up to player of the year, Terrence Edwards.
As a member of the USBWA, mm-hmm. He will also be up for the Oscar Robinson Player of the Year Award, something that the guy from Lafayette won last year before he bolted for Memphis. Shane, did he do enough to get your vote? Or are you just taking the homer route and voting local?
for, you know, National Player of the Year, I'm not going to have him there. I will probably be working on, you know, All-American teams at some point here soon. And I think he's probably maybe going to be on my cut line for third team All-American. I don't think he's probably going to make it, but I think, you know, he's shown a lot by kind of getting those nominations and being in the conversation.
All right, guys, here's another funky ass thing that happens in these polls. Defensive Player of the Year, well-deserved, Justin Abson. I actually, during our midway point through the conference play, I actually named him my player of the year because the guy just blocks all the shots. It's just fun to watch that guy play. He's like no soup for you the entire time. Meanwhile, does not make the first team, the second team, or the third team. Is this just a conference, guys, that just doesn't value defense?
Not at all. I mean, defense, while it might win championships, is not the sexy thing. It's not what people want to watch. They want the 100-point game, blowouts. They don't want to see the double-double that's, you know, 10 points and 12 block shots, so to say. They want all scoring, all gas, all the time.
Man, you got Coastal Carolina's Ogiako, and you got Hosanna Kantenga from Louisiana, both on the third team. Both of them are kind of, you know, like Abram or Abson, just kind of these big middle guys that clog up the middle, but they get called out, but not the defensive player of the year. Shane, make it make sense for me.
It's weird to me. I mean, I feel like, you know, his scoring numbers, his rebounding numbers aren't like crazy good, but to me, I mean, if I was one of the coaches that was voting, if I vote for the guy for defensive player of the year, I'm pretty much automatically putting him on the third team. Like, regardless of anything else, like, I'm pretty surprised that he didn't make any kind of other defensive team. I mean, it's not like he was averaging 2 points per game and two rebounds and only play defense. I mean, he's still a part of their offense. He put up okay numbers as far as, you know, scoring and rebounding goes. Like, it's weird to me that if you value defense, which you think most coaches do, like I said, defensive player of the year on my ballot, you're automatically somewhere else on the teams.
I think Sunbelt just hates defense. That's what I'm thinking. So here's a name. All right, guys, just forgive me on this. I'm going to sound really stupid. I'm just going to accept it.
No, Jeremy, don't do that.
Stop. Don't. I don't think I know who Christian Eugene of Troy is. Why? Why do I not know this name? Are you guys familiar with him? I don't remember.
Yeah, only because he's kind of a local guy for me, being from Spring, Texas.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I mean, he was a guy that kind of flew under the radar there for the Trojans. He was really the big workhorse at the guard position, not necessarily their strongest position, but yeah, he was a ball hawk. He was the one getting the ball down the floor.
Yeah, I look at the first, second, and third teamers here. I just see a lot of stars, guys. I'm like, yeah, that guy. For some reason, like, he's just slipped beyond me. I'm like, who? I've never heard of him. Am I just an idiot, Shane?
You should have heard of him.
Okay.
I was a little surprised he was first team. Like, right. I don't know if it was just, like, people felt like they had to get a Troy guy on there because they did so well as a team. But, I mean, to me, there are some other guys, you know, there on the second team that probably made a little more sense as a first team guy. Mm-hmm. But no, he's a good player. He averages like 15 points a game. He averaged double figures last year. It's not like he just came out of nowhere. So,
all right, listen, Christian Eugene, I am going to watch you play. I'm going to have a special focus on your game when you guys get on the court. I guess it won't be until like Friday or whenever the double bye guys get on. But I am going to focus like a laser on your game. So. I can get familiar with it. So I don't have to do the Shaq thing and say, man, I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with your game. So there we are. Okay. We discussed the first, second, and third team.
So I want to throw one more thing out there, though. Okay. Who was more deserving that was on the second team that maybe should have been elevated to the first team, TJ Bickerstaff or Austin Crowley? Who do you think was more deserving of that bump?
Before you hit the shade, I'm going to say Bickerstaff. I think Crowley kind of struggled a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely think he took a little step back this year, and I agree that it's Bickerstaff.
Yeah, I think you could have put Crowley over Eugene, especially if you were trying to get another guard on there. I don't know if they do it that way, but I honestly thought Bickerstaff was probably one of the top three or four players in the conference. You just look at everything he does, and especially when he's healthy. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of politicking. Like, you know, Troy only gets one guy on any of the teams. And it's kind of like, you know, they're too good of a team to not have somebody somewhere. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see Terran Todd on the third team. As much as I like Terran Todd, you know, he can light it up. But he also has games where he doesn't light it up. Like, if his shot's not falling, he could easily give you a 4-for-29. So I was a little surprised to see him there. So that was one surprise that I had.
On the women's side, Jeremy,
Izzy.
No surprise that it was the coach of the year, Kim Caldwell, for Marshall with her 19-1 season.
We all like Kim Caldwell. Congratulations.
Little surprised, but not surprised at the same time. Two Warhawks bringing home Player of the Year awards with Nunu Bradford, Daisha, as the rest of you know her as, being newcomer of the year, transfer from Clemson. And then sixth woman of the year, Caitlin Manuel, the forward, the junior. She gets another year to come back there, Jeremy. Okay. She was a great spark off the bench, really was able to kind of keep that bigger body in the paint to allow the Warhawks to get those second chance points and rebounds on both sides of the floor. Your girl, Izzy. First team all conference. I was a little surprised that she was not the offensive player of the year, knowing that she was putting up such big numbers throughout the course of the year. But I think down the stretch, those injuries really kind of caught up with her and people kind of forgot what she had done.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. That those injuries did really put a damper on her last 2 or 3 weeks. And yeah, I think it cost her one of those big name recognitions. Although, you know, got the first team recognition. I'm sure she's very happy with that. She has a couple more years on her plate to get the big prize and maybe somehow elevate Arkansas State. But, kind of a, you know, kind of mostly down the line seemed like the right selections, I thought. Shane, did you see anything that made you raise an eyebrow?
I was a little surprised. Abby Beeman, player of the year. Mm. Not that she's not good, and it just felt a little bit like, oh, let's pick the best player on the best team when almost all season, you know, Taryn Ward, Izzy Higginbottom were just putting up ridiculous numbers. Like, I felt like almost right up until it was announced, I thought it was probably between one of those two, and then it was neither one of those two. So I was a little bit surprised there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we did. I mean, the Sun Belt did feature two top 10 or 15 scorers in women's college basketball. Neither one of them gets that big prize. But you know what? Greatness is all about making people great around you, Shane. I mean, if you're just being great by yourself, are you helping the team? I don't know.
The brackets are out as well. And on the women's side, we'll tip off there.
Uh-huh. Are we starting with Southern Texas? Starting with the women.
Starting with the women.
Okay.
South Alabama, of course, bringing up the rear at the 14 seed. They will get Coastal Carolina that on Tuesday, 2 o'clock. Jeremy, no pressure, but that means you have to have the edit up before the first tip-off of the game.
Whew.
So our preview is actually meaningful.
All right.
The early game, Georgia Southern, Georgia State. First days, I see it being Coastal Carolina and a little bit of an upset. Texas State advancing to the next round that kicks off on Wednesday. Guys, what do you think of that opening round?
Well, I think the one thing we know for certain is South Alabama isn't getting out of there, right?
That would be surprising.
Okay, that would be surprising. Even though they sort of get the home court discount, right? Pensacola, not very far away from Mobile. Maybe they get some more fans in there. But yeah, I don't see them going anywhere. Georgia Southern, you think you've given the edge to Texas State, eh?
Always.
They might send you a new t-shirt. Yeah, I can think that's a coin flip. I could see Georgia Southern coming away with that
one. Yeah, I kind of like Georgia Southern that one because, as we were saying before, they have the player on the court, Taryn Ward, who's capable of just taking the game over and, you know, winning it almost by herself against a team of that caliber. So I'd lean a little more towards Georgia Southern, I think, in that one.
The meat of the schedule, that second round, Georgia State, App State, ULM against the winner of the Georgia Southern Texas State game. Winner of Coastal South Alabama gets Southern Miss, and then the Raging Cajuns take on Arkansas State. Out of those, I really like the Warhawks to be able to get the win on the top side of the bracket. Bottom side, Jeremy, I'm holding true there to your Red Wolves and hoping that Izzy is back healthy and able to get them past the Raging Cajuns for a quarterfinal game against Troy.
Yeah, I hate going against my Red Wolves. You know that, Tibbs, as much as anybody. But, man, Arkansas State's struggling. They're struggling. They're out of gas. They're injured. They just look tired. I would be surprised. I would be pleasantly surprised if they got past that tough Louisiana team.
Yeah, if they were healthy, I don't think they're the 10th team in this conference. But you tell me, Jeremy, is there any hope that they enter the tournament more healthy than they have been?
Oh, yeah, there's hope. Yeah, there's some talk that Izzy gets back in there. They also have their last year's freshman of the year, Lauren Pendleton. She's been dinged up with an injury. And then they've had a couple other the women that have just been a little bit sidelined. So, you know, even without Izzy, they like against ULM, they played a really good game until the very end. I mean, they can push you. They're just, I don't know. There's just something missing with that team that I can't quite put my finger on. And I've watched a lot of women's games, a lot of the Red Wolves women's games this year. It's not like I haven't, like, really studied them, and I cannot quite place what is wrong.
Top four seeds on the bracket. Number one, Marshall.
Yeah.
Four, Old Dominion on the top side of the bracket. James Madison, Troy on the bottom side.
Get those big Russians out there.
I just can't pick Marshall to win. Yes, I know they kind of ran wild through the regular season, but this is the postseason where there's a little bit more pressure, a little bit more meaning on these games. I kind of like Old Dominion to capture the top side of the bracket.
Wow.
And how can you go against Chanda and Troy to get the bottom side with Old Dominion, Troy? The revenge game once again, and this time for all the marbles. Chanda gets another hardware to add to the trophy case and wins the women's side of the bracket on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, Troy James Madison sounds like a pretty damn good game, don't you think, Shane?
It does. I mean, I went over to Norfolk for the last regular season game when Jamie and ODU were playing, and the winner was going to get third. And there was like some talk, like this is more on press row, and you know, people in the ODU, you know, support staff and everything. But there was some talk, like, you know, is it really better to win this game and be third and have to, you know, match up with Troy? Like, because this is tough, you know, and it's, you know, that's not a knock on Marshall either. It's just, you know, Troy's kind of made for this tournament, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why is your face so high in Old Dominion, Tibbs? I'd like to know what your thought process is.
They're just a higher of the four seeds, so they're coming in already with a double bye, only having to win two games to get to that championship game to face off against perceivably Troy in the championship game.
So just by the law of averages, the law of Sun Belt entropy, you think the number one Marshall might be in line for a fall?
Yeah. I mean, it's one and done, right? Maybe if it's double a limb, I'm still sticking with the herd.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Something just tells me that they might have peaked in the regular season.
No, but have we ever had a Sun Belt conference tournament that was double elimination?
Not that I've ever think of.
Okay. That'd be kind of cool. I know. I understand. I know where you're coming from, man. A lot of times that number one seed comes in, they're kind of coasting, they're feeling pretty good about themselves, and then get shocked by a team that, you know, didn't see coming. Like, you could see ULM coming in that Old Dominion game and beating Old Dominion and then beating Marshall. I could see that. But, yeah, of all those teams that aren't the top four teams, I feel like ULM has a pretty good chance of coming away the champions. And wouldn't you enjoy that, Tibbs?
No, not in the least bit. I would hate to be trying to reach out to Missy Bilderback saying, hey, Missy, long time no talk. How about a little piece of the net there just for the collection?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sure she would accommodate you. You're Dusty Thibodeau. What, she going to say no to you?
Probably. On the men's side.
Yeah. Very excited.
Bringing up the rear, Old Dominion, they will get Texas State in the late game of the opening round on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Starting off the day is ULM, Coastal Carolina. Yeah. I think the Warhawks have enough to get past Coastal Carolina. But when they match up against the Raging Cajuns on Wednesday, they're leaving Pensacola by about 4:30, 5 o'clock that afternoon for a 2 o'clock tip-off. Other side, you know, Texas State did have a good showing to close out the season there against ULM and against Troy. Maybe the Bobcats have kind of found themselves here late and they're getting hot at the right time. I like the Viva La Bobcats to beat Old Dominion and advance into the second round.
Okay. You know, you said you're a little, you know, you thought that ULM could get by Coastal Carolina. I have to agree with that too. I'm not sure why you're so worried about the Cajuns, though. They've lost four straight before finally stopping that hemorrhaging against Southern Miss. They seem like a team to me in free fall. Like, maybe they just completely ran out of gas. Kind of reminds me of some of those Red Wolves teams back in the past that start off hot and then totally fade at the end. So I don't know if the Cajuns are really in position. Like, that could be a nice sneaky game for a ULM team that has some salt. I think we all know that Texas State is going to beat Old Dominion. Texas State's one of my sort of sleepers, guys. You know, they've won three straight, and they've been pretty good wins. I can see them causing some trouble in the middle of that pack over there.
All four of these teams, and it's like really three of the four. Like, we either know they've got a new coach coming in next year, or we can kind of suspect there's going to be a coaching change there. And I just feel like you don't necessarily know what you're going to get from any of these teams. They may just like say, to hell of it, we're rallying around each other one last time. Or they may say, hey, if we lose this afternoon, I could be in the portal by tomorrow. Like, you know, you never know how the team in that situation is really going to respond. And I think it makes it hard to pick any of those two games.
In the second round, we have kind of the set matchups there of Georgia Southern and South Alabama. Georgia Southern, a team that we wrote off for dead when they started off, was it 0-10, 0-15?
0-12.
And now look at them. With the number 9 seed overall, they get South Alabama. Winner of that will go on to face App State in the quarterfinals. I feel like you can't really pick against Georgia Southern. I don't know what was going on early in that season, but once the conference slate began, they were pretty competitive. They kind of hung around. We've had our heart broken too many times with the Jags, so I'm not picking the Jags. I'm going Eagles in that matchup. On the other side of the bracket, Georgia State, Marshall. I think Georgia State might have found themselves and be back on top, but you can't count out D'Antoni and the Herd, so I'm going Herd to advance to play James Madison.
Wow. I feel like your first assertion, I'm kind of leaning toward that first assertion about Georgia State. I feel like they've kind of figured things out. They're playing fairly good basketball. They did not look good against James Madison. I'm sure they're not looking forward to a rematch if they do win that game. As far as South Alabama, South Alabama's been looking pretty good at the end there. You know, they've got that Tabe guy, T-A-B-E. I always forget how to pronounce his name. The guy can just take over. They got a guy named Gator who's having trouble at the end of the season, but he can light it up when he's on fire. I even though I've declared Georgia Southern sort of one of my Cinderella teams, the more I look at this, the more I think maybe it's South Alabama.
I kind of like South Alabama in that one too, because Georgia Southern has been a completely different team outside of Statesboro. You look at their record. I mean, I think they beat everybody in the Sun Belt in Statesboro except for JMU and App State, right?
Yeah.
And they took App State to overtime, and they were leading JMU by 19 at one point before, you know, giving up the comeback. Like, I think they're just a completely different team at home. And I don't know if I trust them in a neutral court game, especially when, you know, I don't think the fans are going to make a huge difference, but, you know, it's not a lot of travel fatigue or anything for South Alabama to get there.
Yeah. You know what, Shane, you make a good point about road records in this tournament. Nobody's had a good road record in the Sun Belt except for James Madison. Those guys are 12-2 on the road. And I think Appalachian State has a positive road record.
Yeah, they've got a good road record too. Yeah.
But not as sterling as James Madison's record. Yeah. But everybody else has like 5 wins, 2 wins, 4 wins. It's pretty rough. So
those two teams separated themselves is because they did well on the road.
Yeah. Now that is one reason why I like my Arkansas State, because of their six straight at the end of the season, before falling at that last game, 3 of their wins were on the road. So they're kind of working their way up to figuring out how to play away from home. But I jumped the gun, Tibbs. I apologize.
No, it's fine. Top 4 seeds, top side of the bracket. Number 1, App State. Number 4, Arkansas State. Bottom side, Troy, James Madison. I think that really my selections are based more on how do we get two teams into the NCAA. I like that App State, James Madison matchup.
Yeah.
App State wins. James Madison has the strength of schedule and gets that at-large bid.
Oh, is this a prediction or were you just sort of throwing out a scenario?
It doesn't matter. That's my pick for the championship game.
Oh, okay. It's really hard to see anyone playing in the championship game other than App and James Madison. Those teams have just been really good. They've been good on the road. They've been great at home. Gosh, Appalachian State has just been tremendous at home. James Madison, you know, just kind of a professionally run team, well done, well coached. Appalachian State, they're one of the toughest defensive teams I've ever seen. You know, if this turns out to be the matchup, it's going to be good TV to watch. But of those four teams, we said App and James Madison. Do you see Troy making any noise, or is Troy kind of a little like Louisiana to you, kind of struggling at the end there?
I don't know if they're struggling too badly, but I mean, I think they're certainly capable of making some noise. They're certainly capable of winning this tournament. JMU and App State are the clear favorites. If you look at Vegas, you look at, you know, the projection models, anything, they both have the best chance of advancing to the championship game and winning the championship game. But they're not so far ahead of everybody that it's crazy to think we could see Troy, we could see Louisiana, we could see Arkansas State. Like, it wouldn't be shocking to see any of those teams there. I'm personally, you know, not supposed to root, but there's definitely a part of me that's like, we've got to see JMU and App State, because it just feels like everything in the past 2 years has kind of been building towards that matchup for a lot of stakes, whether you're talking football, basketball, whatever. It just feels like those two teams have kind of ripped each other's hearts out over the past 2 years. Now they got to play with something actually on the line, not just like, oh, game day was here.
Well, Tibbs and I have some bad news for you. This is the Sun Belt tournament, Jack, and things rarely go to script in the tournament.
That's true.
There's a good chance Marshall wins this. All right. You see the second round guys? You see that? Who amongst in that group has the most chance of being the champion?
I'm going to go with Southern Miss. I think that they kind of have the a little bit of moxie there at the end of the year. I think they were finally healthy, getting their guys back. I think that they have a chance to take a run, but I'm telling you, you peek ahead. You obviously can't get caught looking ahead, but you peek ahead. That means that you have to go through probably a Texas State team to then play Troy, to then probably play James Madison. If they can make it through that gauntlet, they definitely deserve to be playing on Monday night at 6 o'clock.
Shane, who you got? Yeah. If you had to pick one guy from that group.
I can't argue with Southern Miss too much. They're just the one team that I think if they possibly just say, hey, we're resetting things, we're going to show everybody how good we actually are. Sounds like Jay Ladner is going to try to coach. They'll get him back.
Yeah, that's true.
They might be healthy. They're the one team where it's like, okay, Austin Crowley could score 30 and lift us to victory one day. And Andre Curbelo could have a triple-double the next. And either one of those guys could be the tournament MVP, and it wouldn't be, like, totally out of the realm of possibility. I just think, if there's a team that's the dark horse, I guess we're going to label it, that's seated outside of the top four, I think that's the one that has a legit chance to win four in a row.
You know, I like Curbelo a lot. He's kind of a shorter guy. He's only 6 foot tall. Playing in the guard position. But, man, he makes some circus shots. I'm not sure if Crowley, though, is completely healthy. Last game of the year, he was helped off the court. He had a big ankle sprain. So I'm not sure if he's 100%. And without Crowley out there, I'm not sure if it's Southern Miss, which is why I think it might. Even though the Cajuns lost four of their last five, I still got to think that with Joe Charles, with Katinge, with Kobe, whatever his name is, Kobe something.
Julian?
Yeah, Kobe Julian. I need Kobe to start remembering names. I just feel like they have a pretty good roster to get through there. And if they can get past, we're just going to assume it's ULM. Then they get Arkansas State, that fourth seed. They might have a path. If they can go on a run, if they can figure it out, it might be the Cajuns.
And that's what we have. So anyone have anything else to throw in there? I have one more thing, that being,
okay,
it was college baseball this past weekend. I went to the Astros Foundation Collegiate Classic to check out the Viva La Boob Cats and Raging Cajuns. Bobcats 2-1 on the weekend, including wins over University of Houston and over the Hook'em Horns of Texas. Chase Mora and Aaron Lugo, those are names to watch out for as we get ready to get into Sun Belt Conference action. Raging Cajuns definitely struggled with the pitching and timely hits. So interested to see once they're kind of playing the Sun Belt level competition and not some of the top 20 teams in the nation, how do they kind of shake up that lineup and get the Cajuns back on top of the standings? Coastal Carolina, another big weekend, not in that tournament, but a big weekend overall, propelling them up to number 18 in the NCAA rankings.
All that. Yeah, kind of waiting to see some more Sun Belt teams go poke their heads up there. But yeah, you would think like the Bobcats might get some mention on there after those big wins.
I think they found themselves just outside on the others receiving votes, along with Southern Miss in a couple of polls. Okay. But definitely a team to watch out for. Texas State, definitely very impressive, especially with those bats. Defensive play was a little questionable. Pretty good pitching, though. 2 out of 3 ain't bad, and that'll get them far in Montgomery.
All right.
I just like that the Bobcats gave us an excuse to do the horns down.
It was so funny on the big screen every time they would pan the crowd. And of course, it'd be a Texas State guy. You know, one of them's doing guns up. The next one is then doing horns down. They quickly cut away from him. I thought it was great. How are they going to survive the SEC when they're just that sensitive?
I don't know. I don't know why anybody ever entertained that. Like, why anybody would say somebody outside of Texas go, yeah, we should ban that. Why would anybody agree to that?
I
get it.
I've never understood how you explain what's offensive about that. Like,
they act like it's like a sacrilegious or something.
They act like somebody's putting out a racial slur or something against them when you do it. Like, demand apologies, and it's crazy.
Yeah, they might have gotten some respect for that in the Big 12, but I doubt they're going to get the same respect in the SEC. But not that we care about what happens in the SEC. So, yeah.
We do care about plugs, promos, and parting shots, though. Shane, please give us a good parting shot that does not involve the Daily News Record.
Okay, I'm going to got a little bit of help as far as our response last time when I asked people for food tips. So I'm going to do it again. I found some good places in Pensacola last year, but I'm heading down again this week. I'm definitely going to get some Whataburger. I'll probably get to McGuire's. But hey, if you want to hit me up about where else to go besides just getting a pretzel that's bigger than my head, let me know.
I will say this. When I think of Pensacola, I don't necessarily think, great food. What a culinary atmosphere.
I ate well last time. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, you know, I that just maybe I don't know why. I imagine the seafood's pretty good.
It is.
Okay. All right.
And the Mexican food is really good.
No
and
kidding. Okay. Well,
the Irish pub, like right by the arena, is actually amazing.
A Florida Irish pub. All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Bubble Watson frequents it.
There.
The other Shane. Jeremy, what do you have for us?
Well, all right. So, HowlRaiser put together their 10 favorite players to watch in the Sun Belt tournament. I'm just going to list them for you guys. And they're not in any order. It's not like, oh, he's the best, the number one guy or whatever. It's just 10 guys that I look forward to watching. All right. You guys ready?
No,
always.
Okay. I want you guys to be ready. Nika Metchulavishvili of ULM. Simply because I love big men who can bounce out of the paint and hit a three-point shot.
Shane got that as audio clip.
This should be my ringtone. Justin Abson, the sophomore forward for Appalachian State. I love block shots, and that guy gets after it. I don't know why he's not a first, second, or third team member. Huzana Kantenga, the British junior forward from Louisiana. You know what? He's not serving tea in the paint, fellas. He's serving bruises. I love watching this guy. He's 270 pounds. He comes barreling through the paint. Everybody's just diving out of the way. Nobody wants to get in front. I love Isaiah Nelson, the sophomore forward for Arkansas State. He's a big shot blocker too, but he also scores some points. And most importantly, he's really just a like this kid out there. He's just a young guy. He's very energetic. He engages with the fans. I love watching him. Andre Curbelo, senior guard from Southern Miss. You know, he only gets that 1 year at Southern Miss. Injured almost all year long. We hardly got to see him. Man, the few times I did get to see him, it was one circus shot after another. I love seeing Curbelo out there on the court. I don't know if he's enough to get Southern Miss to get deep into the tournament, but he's going to be fun to watch. I'm going to ruin this guy's name, but Janika Ojiko? The senior center of Coastal Carolina, 6'10 guy, leads the Sun Belt in rebounding. He's a top 10 guy in the NCAA. Listen, when I think of the Chicago Bulls, those championship-winning Chicago Bulls, don't give me Jordan. Don't give me Pippen. Give me Dennis Rodman. I love watching that guy go after rebounds. I love watching the rebounders work. Next is Samuel Tabe, grad student guard from South Alabama. Listen, we've played this team twice at Arkansas State, and every time that South Alabama started losing, getting down on their or getting behind, it was Tabe that would bring them back. That guy just charges through the paint. He's fearless. He's got the big shoulders. The guy can put up 35 points just easy as anybody else. Georgia State sophomore guard Tanari Lane, guy leads the league in three-pointers for the Sun Belt. If you like good three-pointers, you know, he's the guy to watch. He's 6'5", so he's kind of a big guy out there just hooping it. I'll be looking for senior guard Arkansas State Caleb Fields. I love Caleb Fields. The old man of the Sun Belt has been here since the 70s. He has, per game, two more assists than the next leading guy in the Sun Belt. The guy dishes the rock, but he also goes to the paint, goes hard, draws a lot of fouls. Fortunately, doesn't make a lot of field goals. And then finally, Terrence Edwards, the junior guard out of James Madison. Hopefully, we get another year of him. You know, he scores 17 points per game, and that's great. But he's also had 20 more free throw attempts than anybody in the Sun Belt. The guy is fearless. He gets the bucket. He draws the fouls. He shoots at 82% to punish everybody. I advise you not to foul Edwards, but he's going to make you foul. And those are the 10 guys I'm looking forward to seeing in the Sun Belt tournament.
You're all familiar with the X-Follow of CFB Campus Tour. This is the guy that went to 90 games as a world record in 2023.
Yeah, sure.
In addition to checking out stadiums, he is famous for his obstructed views, finding the seats in stadiums that are for sale, where you can get a ticket and you can't necessarily see the full field. You can't see maybe part of the field. He gives different ratings and all of that. On that note, I think the most he's ever spent for a ticket there, probably less than $100, wouldn't you say?
I don't know. Is that his threshold?
No. He has a much higher threshold when he bought a ticket to the national title game, but a whole other story there.
Okay.
A fan, though, going to the recent international show of Taylor Swift in Melbourne, Australia, dropped $700.
Hmm.
For a ticket to the show with zero visibility thanks to a massive tower in front of it. Guys, are you spending $700 to be in the room with Taylor Swift and not be able to see her?
You know, the worst concert tickets I ever bought, my father-in-law bought them, and he said, man, I got this great deal on tickets. And it was for Billy Joel and Elton John. Remember when they were touring together? And this was in Memphis. I said, okay, great. And it was behind the stage. It's like we saw the back of their heads the whole time. It was just a wild experience. I will never forget it. But no, why would I spend 700 rocks for something I could just listen to on the radio? Shane, that is incredible. You wouldn't do that. You're a more pragmatic man.
No, I wouldn't. I'm trying to remember what I spent. I went to the ALCS in 2014 and got a standing room ticket. I don't remember what I spent on it, but like, you know, I basically just kind of walked around the stadium, like the entire nine innings. Like, so I kind of get it. If you really want to be somewhere for a moment, I kind of get it, but not $700 to not see the concert.
Maybe you got something to share. If it's something like it, if you're a super fan of something, you just want to feel the energy that's around you, and this is the only ticket you can get. All right, maybe it's worth it. I mean, $700. It's a, you know, that's fleeting, but the experience lasts forever.
Jeremy, I'll give you $700 to not watch Arkansas State.
Never.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.